Go ahead. And do you remember we left off last week, James? We were talking about communication, and it was actually Brandon Spencer's idea to call this one the heart of communication, which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's great. I believe we left off last week with solutions. That was the second topic, the second question in the topic of last week's
Right.
discussion. And we had a nice round of us all just like weighing in what types of approaches we can take in our communication abilities and what kind of things is it going to take with communication in order to kind of like, close that gap between those who are aware and those who, might need to heighten their awareness.
Well, one thing that Derek and I were talking a little bit about ahead of time was, there's all these online chats, and as trying to be, trying to advertise for the conferences, trying to build excitement for the shows, we've tried creating these different types of chats. We've tried Discord, which is really funny, the names of these things, right? Discord. That sounds like it's going to be some great communication right there. Let's cause some discord, and then they reel you in, they give you this cool thing, and then they start kind of pulling the rug out from underneath you and making your old chat disappear and telling you have to pay money to do things that you used to be able to do. But if even if it wasn't for the audacity of the sites, and how they seem to be destroying communication in so many ways, all the social media sites, people on social media sites and threads, from my point of view, have a very rude kind of way of doing things more often than not. And
Yeah.
I also like think about it, if it was a real conversation and we were standing around talking about something, my little chat bubble, and then James said something, you'd see his little chat bubble, and then someone else just shows up with something totally blue, random from left field, and they just want to advertise their, what it is they're excited about, but without any kind of context or relationship to the conversation that's going on in the thread or on the channel, and it's like that's how it's become, and people just see it as normal. But I struggle with it. I really get frustrated. I'm like, why are you pushing that? That's not even what we're talking about. Like, how do we keep a conversation if we can't even stay on the same page for, a few minutes? Welcome, Jerry. Thanks for joining us, man. On short notice. Appreciate it.
Well, it's funny that you bring all this up, Chris, because like I've been rereading this book by what's her name? By E. Mary Boothe, and it's about Richard W. Wetherill's right action ethic, and it's called Be Right or Go Wrong. And there's a chapter in that book called Systems of Reasoning. And Wetherill had, proposed that there are two systems of reasoning. The first system, and I have it copied and pasted in my notes here because I thought that this would be pertinent for tonight's discussion. So if I may, I'd like to read this for y'all. Wetherill's first system, there's two. First system of reasoning. The system in common usage by society, he called the relative system of reasoning. In that system, people behave in accord with the motives they form to get what they want and avoid what they don't want. In that system, they learn about natural laws and phenomena, various professions and disciplines, and about good and evil. But the information gets distorted by filtering through a mental screen of personal motives based on people's particular desires. No matter how good or evil those desires might be. Okay. Then the second system Wetherill called the absolute system. It is based in on the principles of right action in which people reason from natural laws and phenomenon, professions and disciplines, and reality. Their actions and attitudes do not filter through a mental screen of personal motives, but instead reflect an ongoing intent to respond to the needs of reality by doing what is right. And so there's five criteria that you can kind of rate yourself on a scale of 1 to 10 and see how close you can get to the number 50. And this is kind of how you can, according to Wetherill, how you can kind of gauge whether or not you are operating on the absolute system instead of the relative system.
Relative,
so
right.
From one,
what was the name of the book again, James?
Be Right or, Be Right or Go Wrong by E. Mary Boothe.
Oh, Jerry's all over it.
And
awesome.
And so it's about Richard W. Wetherill's ethic of right action, or right action ethic. It's actually a trademarked thing because he used to call it humanetics, but then that got kind of misused. So they retermed it right action ethics. And so the five criteria are: number one, my attitude toward the people I live with is logical and moral. Number two, I willingly support my employment with an honest day's work. Number three, I am accountable for my mistakes and want to be told about them. That's where the communication comes in my opinion. A lot of this is communication, really. It's all based in communication because we speak what we see in reality. That's how, you know, anyways. Number four is I stay calm and rational when something goes wrong. And number five is I try to stay in touch with reality during all of my waking moments. So with those five criteria, take a moment of self-reflection, say 1 to 10, where do I rate myself on all those? And if you're, you know, if you're operating within the absolute system, if your intent is to operate within the absolute system, then you'll be honest, at least with yourself, because that's where honesty going outward starts. The honesty with yourself carries on to your effect that you have on other people. So honesty with self is where it all starts. The way people communicate with one another, I agree with this. Most people are operating in the relative system where they're just trying to get to what they want instead of wanting to be in good relationship with reality itself. Reality changes all the time. All right. That's why, you know, we might find ourselves having a different version of or a different perception of the truth as time goes on. But as long as you're operating within that sphere of reality and intently forming a good relationship with reality, I'm of the opinion that you are operating in truth if that's your intent. So when it comes to communication, the heart of communication, as tonight's episode is so aptly called, the heart of it comes down to where is your intent, right? So when we're operating in balance of thought, emotion, and action, this triune, you know, this balance that we have to strike, the heart is like the emotion. So if we're acting so emotionally, we have to keep those emotions in check. It's healthy to feel them and to understand them and to have a relationship with them, I guess, is the result of the understanding. But if we're purely acting out of emotion, then it could actually cause real harm in the long run. This is where the rational, the logical, that's when that comes into play. So we have to strike a balance between those two things. And if we can successfully do that within ourselves, then the communication, the action as a result of the thoughts and emotions, the action is going to be closer to truth than if not for the practice of being logical and rational, all while having a good foundational relationship with your emotions. So the heart of communication, how we speak truth and breathe truth out to others. This is where we form reality. If we're telling the truth, then we're going to have a good relationship with reality as reality moves on and we operate within it. So I hope that's a good place to start.
Yeah, that's a beautiful distinction. And it's ringing in my mind, this conversation I had earlier this week. I had a great conversation with Cynthia from Affirm Life Daily podcast. She did a beautiful job coming up with these amazing questions, and we had a great show. So I would recommend people check out affirmlifedaily.com with Cynthia Mitchell. And also had a good conversation with Sarah Cross and on Crosstalk on Revolution and Radio. So I want to recommend to check out these folks. Talk about good communicators. But one thing I keep coming back to is, like, the difference, what you're talking about, relativism and being objective, right? And if in a way, what the two descriptions you're talking about from the book is very similar to what Mark describes as Satanism versus not. Like, if your intentions and your mind is totally ego based, how's this going to work out for me? Or in a conversation, what do I want to say? You know, it's all ego based. It's never going to be communal. It's never going to be a back and forth. It's always going to be like me, right? It is the heart of it. You know, a true communication, we have to be open to accept that we might not know something that the other one knows. And if people really don't recognize that reality has an objective fact to it, then everything's subjective and it becomes this solipsistic, like, well, if I don't think it, then it's not real type of thing. And it's easy to close out other people because they're just like non-player, what do you call them? NPCs, right? Or they're not even real. Only I'm real. That's like the Satanistic point of view. And if people are trapped in that paradigm, of course we're going to have trouble communicating. We're not even in the same reality, you know. But I know you got a lot you were preparing to say too, Derek. So I'll pass it to you next. And Jerry, pop in whenever you're ready after that.
Cheers, brother. I hope you hear me a lot clearer than last week, that faulty internet connection. And yeah. James, love what you said to kick things off. It was a great restart. And yeah, going along the lines of that heart-based intelligence and like, what are people basing that off of? You know, is it really eternal axioms of truth? You know, like hermetically sealed principles, natural law? Is that what our heart is, you know, based on and just actually aligned to and activated towards kind of thing? And that kind of made me think about what you said as well, as far as like our intentions. And we had a great chat with a Soul Expression who popped into the chat with Chris and Cynthia last night, as well as myself. And he was on Dissolve the Divide and he broke down that word, like intention, like what are we intention with? What are we tense about? And that could be like seen as a good and bad thing as well, kind of like what are we focused on, in a sense, if you will. So yeah, like if we are focused and aligned on truth and we have that the intention based on that, great, within the pillars of enlightenment, right, the masculine and feminine, that oscillating electromagnetic life force energy that's within that heart core center of that heart-based intelligence, right? So when those three things are well aligned and intertwined with that divine, right, it's gonna make that rhetoric a lot more clear and distinct from, you know, the falsehoods and other things that just are not in accord with what is true, in a sense. And I feel like, yeah, when people really break through certain thresholds within themselves and, yeah, they get that inner correspondence, that proper self-talk, so they can properly speak with other people and not be having, you know, inner inklings and, like, you know how the shadow ego can have that, you know, self-talk, self-sabotage, and kind of, like, self-doubt sometimes, and, like, the feelings of not worthy, in a sense, or, like, oh, what I have to say isn't good enough for other people and this and that. No one, you know what I mean? So what does that say about the person and how they have not done the inner work and kind of really self-actualized themselves and, you know, gone through some of those alchemical stages? So, yeah, there's a lot to consider with all these things to even get to the point of speaking from that awakened soul, if you will, you know, like, you heard the expression in certain songs, right? Like, speak from the heart, let the soul be free. Mon ami, mais oui. And yeah, I'll just end it off and pass it to Jerry with the... I forgot. Never mind. But yeah, we always have to stay true to our word as men, as women, right? And so we are exposing ourselves every time we open our mouths as well. So speak with the proper nobility and honor to yourself and your soul.
Thanks, Derek.
And others, of course.
Yeah. You know, and connecting the mind and the heart is very important. And, you know, the soul, the mind, and, you know, the physical, the mental, and the spiritual. What do you got to say, Jerry? You got any thoughts on this? Hey, what's up, MCAD?
What's up, MCAD? Yeah, I started talking, but realized my microphone's off. Anyways, what I thought of when you were talking, Derek, was about the Serenity Prayer. And I'll just say it real quick. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So why am I bringing this up? Because I think it takes courage to be a good communicator with oneself specifically. So as you're talking about these affirmations that people haven't done the shadow work, and the reason I'm bringing this up is because you need to have that courage to go from, oh, yeah, I'm not good enough to, you know, I will be good enough, because it takes action. So you got to be courageous enough to take that leap of faith and the steps forward to become that which is the best version of yourself. So I have that to say about what you said, Derek. And James, it's very synchronistic that you've been reading that book, because I actually started reading it a few days ago and I intend to finish it. I love what you said about the intention, but anyways, yeah, it's synchronistic that I started reading that, and I love what you said, and the moral relativism is abundant out here. It's wishy-washy. And once you understand the truth, it's very hard to be misaligned with oneself. And the more truth I find, I see that my heart is as light as a feather. And it's easier to take action that way. It's, you know, we're authentic. And the one thing I am working through right now are kind of like when I get emotional, like how to break through that, especially with family members. So if you want to, you know, touch on that, I'll give an ear.
That's a good point, because I think my like personal worst times I've ever done with communication have been times when I'm emotionally charged. And I see relationships as like a constant test, litmus test of where we're at in our personal journeys. Because people can be very difficult to deal with, and they represent the difficulties inside of us, like just in a hermetic way. I've always found that when I look at the disagreements or problems in my life, when I'm able to stand back and look at it a little bit more objectively, you know, obviously it's my own subjective experience, so it's not 100% objective, but when I'm able to back off a little bit, maybe walk on a trail, think about the problems in my life, when I'm able to do that, then usually I'm able to kind of see how it fits in a cycle that I'm dealing with in the larger realm of my own mental spiritual journey and my own life. And so when we learn to look at problems with people as also our own self-work process, then it becomes a much more positive experience. Because even if someone else is being an asshole, it's like, oh, they're giving me an opportunity to figure out how to deal with that asshole part of existence, of myself even. And so if we look at it as a challenge, that really helps. But I will say, what they call the heat of the moment, it's really hard not to get knocked off kilter a bit when someone strikes at you in some way or makes you feel threatened. And usually that's exactly what you were talking about, James. It's because my ego gets involved in some way or another. The person I'm having a disagreement is misrepresenting me in some way, and I don't like to be misrepresented. I see myself as a, you know, virtuous, good guy who never makes any mistakes, you know? And then when someone says, oh, you made a mistake here, it's like, oh, well, I don't make mistakes. You know, like that part of myself wants to fight this storyline that this other person is presenting that I don't like how it represents me. But when I'm able to get some distance from that situation and take that emotion out of it, I can communicate really clearly what happened. Like, oh, he said that, and then I said that, and that's why we got frustrated. So how do we get more skilled in the moment to handle our emotion or not let it get so close to the surface? Well, let's talk about that. You guys got some ideas? James?
Yeah, I'd like to jump in and touch upon what you were just saying, because the dissolving of the ego is a lifelong process. It just is, because we all get caught up in our own life. It's our life. So we're the one living our life. And when you get called out for something, it's a natural response to be like, hey, what, you know, kind of have that, but it's how you carry yourself on from that moment. That's the work. It's, are you going to have a emotional outburst and get all defensive? Or are you going to reflect upon the situation and open yourself up for learning? Are you going to be in growth mode? Or are you going to shut down and stifle that growth and say, no, I'm cool where I'm at? You know, so I commend you, Chris, for being able to, you know, take a little bit of criticism, you know, from time to time or be pointed out. Cause like, as I said in that, you know, in that, those 5 points, like, you know, number three is I am accountable for my mistakes and want to be told about them, you know, but lashing out emotionally isn't productive. It's not working toward any positive ends. So that's what we have to do. We have to check ourselves before we wreck ourselves, as Derek might say.
Yeah. Talk about good sayings too. It takes two to tango, right? Like usually when there's a fight or a disagreement, there's something each of the person has usually done, you know, in order for there to be a fight or disagreement, you know?
Well, absolutely. But if you intend to still have a relationship with that person, then having a rational approach to mitigating that problem is probably the best way forward, because that's forward, you know, instead of retreating into some weird cave that only you exist in. You know, and so there was a little bit of talk about like integrity, you know, from the other panelists. And that's an important part is having integrity. Because when you say you're going to do something, you better go and do that thing. You should have that integrity. And I think sometime tonight, like I don't know if now is the right time to bring it up, but we're talking about communication and we have to know if we're going to be talking about like logic and rationality and all this stuff, then people need to know about logical fallacies, because that's those are the tools of the sophist. And if somebody's going to be coming at you with deceptive speech, you need to be able to point that out and say, instead of being on the receiving end of the criticism and the receiving end of being held accountable, you need to hold others to account too. So that's a part of communication. It goes both ways, like you said, Chris, two to tango. When you know someone's coming at you trying to trick you with like weird speech that's like all over the place, you got to recognize it, you know.
And that is like the common experience I have had. It was on in my conversation with Cynthia on Wednesday when she was asked me a question. It prompted me to remembering my own awakening experience that felt like awakening in the Matrix. I was trying to talk to people about weather engineering. I was still not completely decided that I had discovered something real or whether I was in a conspiratorial trick of some type, you know, and being fooled. But all the evidence that I was seeing was leading me to think that what I heard from Dane Wigington was true. And everybody else was denying that truth. And so I was going through like intelligent people I knew and people I respected and trying to have a conversation with them, trying to engage them in this. Okay, look, here's this information I came across. It's boggling my mind. It's messing up my whole life. You know, it's making me question humanity. Can you help me with this? And a lot of people weren't willing to help me with it. And what people do when you bring up a subject that they're not ready to talk about is they either quickly change the subject. That's the nicer way. But the more common is to criticize you, is to hit you with some sort of insult or, oh, that's a bunch of da, 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 right? And what fallacy is that right off from the beginning when you're presenting information and opening a dialogue and someone finds a way to criticize you or put you down? What's that one called? That's ad hominem attack. So let's start there, right?
An ad hominem, or it could be what is known as an appeal to ridicule. It really depends specifically on just what the person is saying. But there's typically, when it comes down to a personal attack, more than not, ad hominem, which is the attack on the person, is like saying like, oh, why would you listen to Chris about any of this? Like, his headphones are white. You're going to listen to guys with white headphones? Like, that's dumb. This guy is dumb. He's got white headphones. And everyone's like, huh. And it could be a number of things. Like, an appeal to ridicule would be like,
all conspiracy theories, right? Like, yeah, right. Like, someone could really like run the whole world like in the Disney movies. That's ridiculous, right? They're ridiculing a concept, including what you're saying must be part of that concept by association or whatever, right? I mean, that's like two fallacies,
getting somebody to disregard an argument by just simply writing it off, like using a pejorative as a conspiracy theorist. Oh, why that guy's a conspiracy theorist. Using that as a pejorative is the appeal to ridicule, or saying like, why would you listen to David Icke about anything? He thinks, he's just going to, if I disagree with him, he's just going to call me a lizard person or something, and like getting people to laugh it off and dismiss a good point or a good argument, or not participating in the argument itself, instead trying to veer it off into a different path by addressing something that everyone can just laugh at or ridicule the person posing the argument, that's really unhealthy speech. And it's something that sophists do. They don't want to participate in arguments. They don't want to have to prove their point. They want the crowd on their side by appealing to all of these base level consciousness type of things that crowds typically tend to go along with, because that's what they've been programmed to do. The sheep, the masses, the people that just clot together to like go and do whatever the hell that is that they want to go and do, they don't have time for individual thought or critical thinking. They just want to get along, to go along to get along. And that is a huge, huge roadblock in communication, because if you're starting to rock the boat and you're starting to make people feel uncomfortable with your rhetoric, typically what they do, they will shut down. And that's what comes back to what Jerry was saying about family members, is they just have this way that they thought that life should be, and they were prescribed this thing from a very early age. And when that thing that they were prescribed, this reality that they were told exists, starts to get disturbed, they shut down emotionally, consciously. They don't have time for it. So it comes back to a little bit about what we talked about last week, with an individual needing to have that, what I call a paradigm shifting moment within their individual life, to be able to come out of that ego-based consciousness and start seeing the world for the wider reality that it truly is.
Step on out of Plato's cave. It's going to hurt your eyes, friends, exactly. Because it's been dark in there. We've been getting deceived for a long time. Yeah. I think the next big one that pops into my head is the straw man fallacy, right? That's like the next most common one. Like, if you're talking about weather engineering, someone's going to pop up with the word chemtrails. Like, oh, chemtrails has already been debunked. I'll show you right here a thread with a pilot that says he's been flying for 50 years and he knows there's no such thing as chemtrails. That's stupid, right? Like, they're going to take the weakest argument that exists and they're going to attack that, right? And that makes it like, oh, the case is closed. I saw your evidence and your evidence is bad. They're going to choose the weakest type of evidence that you might not even brought up, but that exists out there on that topic. And like you're saying, David Icke talks about lizards. So because of the fact he mentioned lizards, everything else he says must be bunk, because look, he talked about lizards. Come on, So that's a straw man.
Or when he starts to make a good point. Yeah. Or when he starts to make a good point about something that's an actual argument that needs to be discussed, all you have to do is say, this is the lizard person guy. And everyone's like, oh yeah, what an idiot. We don't have to listen to him.
Yeah. And it's funny, because I don't know, since like the Obama era, as you know, it became memeified or whatever the fuck, and like, oh, he dropped the, he said something clever and dropped the mic, even though it wasn't all that clever from the non-statist perspective type of thing. You guys remember that? Have you guys noticed that people have taken on this kind of like super too cool for school type of mentality, and like some, it's like easily trying to size up people and trying to like just win the argument and not be wrong, as if their shit never stunk. And so it's like, you know, things that rhyme with this witty banter, shitty manners, you know, and what's the point? And it's just programming on top of programming, like you guys mentioned. And this goes into the issue of how language has been the battlefield, because, you know, logos, take it back to logos and all this, and the word, intellect, air elements, swords, S words, all these things. Take it to the tarot and the hermetically sealed first principle of mentalism, right? Goes back to intellect. And I found it really interesting looking through the cards just the other day. I mean, just there's a good amount of suffering going on with some of these cards, right? People are not sharpening their swords, meaning their S words, their words, on the right type of stone, or, you know, grinding stone, whatever. Maybe it's because of the programming and social engineering with all these logical fallacies, where our swords, our intellect is being sharpened on fucking pyrite, or, you know, all this counterfeit bullshit, right? I'm speaking kind of metaphorically and abstractly, right? But, you know, these cards speak in that sense, and I'm trying to complement that a little bit with my own abracadabra, mother lovers. Like, that's right. Are we not using our casting spells during this podcast? And I find it odd that, you know, that just this word podcast goes back to iPod, right? So it might be odd that, you know, we are, I might be abroad in all these things, but, you know, how broad is the band of the bandwidth of this, you know, type of transmission, if you will. Anyways, I'm not trying to babble on in the land of Babylon. And that's kind of what people have been conditioned to having, right? Unfortunately. And yes, they're not operating and navigating with the compass properly calibrated within the center of their chest, right? So it goes back to the heart always. It's like the first eye that can see even beyond the three. Mais oui, mon ami. And OMG, what if you flip that around? You have GMO, don't you know, right? And so you have all this, these little LOLs and this and that. And like, I was thinking about this in high school when, you know, cell phones were coming out, and, you know, like, I was like a hopeless romantic type, and like, seeing all this stuff, I'm like, I'm not feeling this. I'm not trying to like date women that are like about this, like social media, even like pre-social media stuff. And it's like they're expressing they're limiting their expressional emotions through tiny text, whatever the fuck, these tiny chat and whatever the you know what I mean? So like everything has been shortened down and like compartmentalized a little too much, and people are acting like it's so fucking cool and, you know, witty nitty that it's like, no, actually, it's kind of shitty, because you're taking out some of the humanity out of these things. And I'm not following every little extra acronym that people want to make up just because they're too fucking lazy to type out three fucking words, right? The hell. But, you know, I was thinking back in high school, like, this is like, you know, 1998, 9, of like, geez, I would just love to hear a woman's laughter instead of just hearing these, seeing these, you know, LOL texts and that kind of stuff, you know? That kind of stuff. So, Jerry, what you got, man?
Well, in-person conversation always beats text, in my opinion. Not to say that technology can't be used for good. I mean, sometimes, you know, you're in France, I'm in Mexico. Sometimes we have to message each other. But, yeah, don't be lazy and, you know, not spell out the words entirely. Unless, you know, you're creative and you can do that in some form or fashion. Nothing wrong with that. But, yeah, great points, everyone. I'm just thinking about the triggers and the chats. Leslie's typing in some amazing comments in the chat, how, you know, she's like, she has a lot of knowledge, Leslie. I'm noticing that. It's very helpful. And then Rick is also commenting things like asking why you feel triggered and whatnot. And you guys, well, James, you made a great point about the logical fallacies. And yes, you want to know those for intellectual self-defense. Yeah, I mean,
I got a question for you, Jerry. On Leslie's comment, she said, our capacity to stay calm when emotionally triggered is affected by our basic self-care habits, sleep, nutrition, exercise, and stress management. For me, that really hits home because I can think almost every time when I've got into a zone where my emotions are getting triggered, it's usually one or two of those things hasn't been going well. My nutrition has been slacking. Or my sleep's off. I haven't slept enough. I tend to be much more emotionally triggered when I'm not getting good sleep. But I know you're into working out. I'm curious, in your experience, how much difference does that make in your mental, emotional abilities when you're in good shape versus when you're not doing your regular working out?
It's kind of funny because what happened was, since I got injured, I haven't been working out, right, as much. So that part of the things that you displayed has been off-kiltered, let's say. So maybe that's why I get triggered, you know? It's like, oh, man, like this huge part of my life has now, you know, it's been on hold, but I know I'll make it. But, you know, Leslie made the point to deal with the triggers. That's huge. That's what I want to bring up here. It's very tied into shadow work. It's like, what can I do about this? You know, I'm just going to focus on me. Ah, all right. And then we got the accountability, like James was saying before. It's like, all right, now I have a framework I can work with to work past this. And I've identified that, but, you know, it was great to ask you guys, you know, your opinions on this. You guys obviously know what you're talking about. So, yeah, I don't know what else to add right now.
I had another idea popping off what Derek was saying. He mentioned suffering. And I was like, realize I don't think I've ever looked up the derivation of suffering. I don't remember what I got. So I just checked that out on Edom Online just to get a quick look at what they came up with there. And it's like it goes back to bearing children, to bear, to carry, right? To endure bravely or unflinchingly. And it's funny to me in a way that the most important aspect of communication is listening. And sometimes listening is like bearing children. It's like there's all this wildness coming out of what someone's saying from your perspective or whatever, and you have to like take it in, right? And that's not always easy. Or you have something you're dying to say and they're still saying what they're saying, and you have to bear it. You have to carry that frustration or that impatience within you that wants to be done with the convo or wants to say what you want to say. But it takes a certain amount of suffering in order to open the doors for a reasonable conversation, which means shutting down your own internal dialogue for a minute and caring enough to bear that person's whatever it is they want to share. Care to bear the share, yo. James, I think you popped across something juicy over there. And I want to point out that you can't see this, James, but your red swoosh, it actually connects directly to your red line coming after you when you're in the right position. And it looks like your heart is coming in like a red swoosh. It's really neat. Anyway. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, man. I did that intentionally. Very, very good of you to bring up active listening skills, though, Chris, because that is the...
What were you talking to me? Sorry.
You son of a bitch. that is the way that we do communicate, you know, real communication. What Leslie's talking about in the chat is something I had written down in my notes. And I would just like to point out that triggers are, like, more than not a sign of an unfulfilled need, right? So whether it be sleep or diet or whatever, you know, we as conscious individuals, like, you need to look after yourself, you know, to be able to provide for the other people that around you in a positive way. It's important to remind yourself of that, like, going forward, you know, through this treacherous thing called life. Oh my God, what do? Well, you got to, like, take care of yourself, take good care of yourself. You deserve it. So, I just want to make sure that people understand that you're important and that you're loved by the universe. You're a unique expression of consciousness and you deserve the self work, and that you should take that and put that in, like, top tier importance, because of the effect that you will have on the world, your footprint in reality that you leave behind when this corporeal form is done. Like, you deserve it's your birthright to live a decent life. And in order to do that, you have to take care of yourself. Others are relying on you. And if maybe you don't have a large family who relies on you, then you still have yourself that's relying on you. So the work is worth it. So work it because you're worth it, you know? And that goes back to, like, I think Derek was bringing up negative self-talk. And that is a huge thing that a lot of people go through when they feel like they don't have a support system. So with that being said, Freeman Fly always used to say, be the friend that you wish you had, right? And so, like, that's how you create a support system around you. I keep this card on my desk, and it says on the card, no matter what your day is like, be the kind of friend to others you want others to be to you. When you love others, they will love you. And that's the golden rule in a nutshell. You know, so, like, this is, like, it seems like I'm going off on a tangent, but this all comes back around because of the way that we all live together. Communication sometimes can go beyond just words being spoken, right? It can be, like, how you live with one another, you know? You communicate through actions sometimes more than you do through speech. So, you know, we have no choice. Like, this is the law of the universe. Like, your actions affect other people, cause way of the world. That's it. Make peace with it, because it's not going anywhere. It's immutable. It doesn't go anywhere. It's been like this forever. It will be like this forever. So your resistance to that is causing strife and havoc for other people. If you're resisting it, I mean. So, like, it's a hard truth. It's a hard pill to swallow, but it is really important that people understand that and start applying these principles to the way that they actually live, instead of just having the knowledge and being able to regurgitate it or whatever. Like, you got to live this way. It's not just words. It's a way of life.
Yeah, that kind of, if you don't, were you finished, James? I wanted to piggyback just real quick.
Yeah, I can be done.
I was thinking about this earlier today, kind of like thinking of analogies and ways to portray or convey, right? It's like knowledge that's not being applied. It's like, you know, stacking your books on the shelf and never really touching them. And they're just collecting dust and they're festering. And where's the feng shui, at least, to, you know, does that make sense? Yeah, I wanted to finish real quick because, correlating the law of correspondence once again, my friends, what about that gut brain connection and that correspondence. And just like, hey, if you're eating shitty food all the time, you might have a shitty attitude around, you know, a good duration as well, type of thing. So yeah, these things definitely play factors into just our daily overall experience and well-being, and just how we are in or out or kind of fluxing in the moment or out of it, right? And yes, there's so many different ways we can sharpen our swords correctly, right? But yeah, it's like sometimes we're like jousting with each other too much, verbally jousting, if you will. You know, I'm still going off of this S words type of stuff and still with the tarot real quick, because like there's, and with the swords, it's the masculine energy. And sometimes like people got way too much yang up in their thang, and they're, you know, they're not even properly trained to, you know, wield their swords correctly. And so they're like causing their own self-inflicted suffering and suffering upon others, if you will. Right. And yeah, you could take that as a little exaggeration of me being a little funny with it, whatever, but it does make sense, you know? So yeah. In regards to people having their shadow ego knee jerk to too much self-defense type of stuff when, you know, others are trying to correct them or hold them accountable and this and that. And, you know, it's like, no, the shadow ego is like, no, I'm not wrong. Or, you know, what I said was correct or whatever the fuck. Right. So yeah, things to consider with that. And let's keep it on the swords with medieval times and Lord of the Rings and all those wonderful Tolkienian things. We can't be smeagling the truth, right? And just ourselves, and act like our subjective perspective is the truth, you know, because it ain't all caps with that shit. We have to just align our own shit with objective truth. And so I think that's why a lot of people get hung up. I think I mentioned this before. People take things too personal. And if people would just chill the fuck out a little bit more and just realize that it's not, you know, like, the universe is that mirror reflection and all these things. And like, we just have to be aligned to that. So the universe has our back and we see it at the front. We have more of a 360 degree perspective on things, I guess, and a navigated way to circumvent these things. And so with a lot of people that might have too much yang up in their thing, you know, the masculine imbalance, you know, the egg-headed over intellect type of stuff that's not, you know, really connected to their proper intuition, right? Thinking about the classic tale of the Hobbit, you know, that, you know, people could take that book out, you know, go back to nature in a forest or on a hill and focus in on Tom Bombadil, maybe even sit under a tree, smoke some bomb and chill, and realize that he is kind of like the physical embodiment of the God or creation, if you will. And he's just like speaking in rhythm and rhyme and sound song frequency just all the time. And it's it's quite obvious that I kind of have a inspiration from that. And just thinking about that and being in that free flow of the dance of life, if you will, and you've made that trance and dance already from the programming, so you're actually living your life more authentically. And so I just love how these stories and allegories fit in so well, and we can apply them so much more to our lives and enrichen them and break free from, you know, all these mind control programmings and all these things. So yeah, that one was for the Shire, you know.
Yeah, like the saying, keeping it real, get real. Like, we need to get more real, you know. People got to reel it in, because, you know, I had a frustration this week. Like, I had to deal with this issue where I had to call the rental agency that we have here, right? And it turns out, from my point of view, they've been cheating us out of money for months. And to try to get them to fix this problem, they were making me jump through hoops.
getting them some special paperwork that I shouldn't have ever had to get from my point of view because it was already taken care of. And this got me really frustrated. And these are one of the things where I do feel myself kind of losing it a little bit sometimes, like these phone conversations or being in the DMV or something or having to deal with someone where they're being so adamant about the rules. And some people even have the sense to kind of say, hey, look, I hate this rule. I didn't make it up. I know it sucks. And if someone does that, it actually makes it a lot easier for me to deal with it. I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know, like this sucks. But then I'll have to pay the damn fee or whatever so I can go on with my life. You know, we can't all keep doing that forever. We got to stand up against stuff eventually. But the point I'm making is that the more technotronic our world becomes, the more people are hiding behind these facades of now you can only talk on the answering machine. And then if you actually get through to a person, they're going to tell you, oh, well, sorry, I can't do anything. And it's like, I try to break through to people and I'm like, look, I'm a human being. Aren't you a human being? Don't you understand what exceptions are? Don't you understand, you know? And occasionally you can kind of crack the egg a little bit, but it seems more and more as time rolls on, it's less and less human. Our interactions with things are business. Things are about money. Things are about, did you fill it out? Do you have the right thing? Did you, you know, did you check the box? You know, is your name spelled the same here as it is here? Literally having people in a doctor's office telling me that I'm not who I am because my name's written differently on two different pages and I have to write it differently. It's even though, like, isn't this my name? You know? And yet, you know, these type of things where it's totally inhuman practices that we're all being sort of pushed into, filtered into through our jobs. So, like, I think it's a real challenge, whoever you are, wherever you're doing, to not become a robot, to not just, you know, treat people like humans, you know? Step outside of the line, you know, step outside of the box, break the fucking rule if you have to. Like, don't make people feel like that. That's not right. We gotta start pushing back on this stuff. Sorry, that was like kind of a little bit more of a expressing my frustration with dealing with phone crap. But it is. It's about communication. It's one of the things that brought this topic up for me is these kind of things where people are losing the ability to be living, breathing human beings that can communicate. But we're trying to work on that.
I think it's a good point, right, Chris, that if you're frustrated, like you want to communicate that, not just hold it in, or at least you want to express it in a creative way and not let it sort of cause damage in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get your things done when you lose your temper and then the person who's helping you doesn't really want to help you. So it's not always a good strategy. But it is important, I think you're right, to be honest. You know, and I find that that is the one way I have found to bridge the gap sometime between me and someone on the other side of the counter is to be like, look, here's what's going on. I am frustrated. I'm trying not to take it out on you, but who else am I supposed to talk to? You know, what can you do? You know, and sometimes it works to just sort of be real with people. Another thing I do is I try to notice people's name in places I shop, especially if I go to the same places over and over. I try to not just see a person that I buy things from as a clerk, but as a real human being who has their own life and family and problems. And I try to notice, you know, when other people are having a bad day, when I go to the counter to buy some food and they're frustrated behind the counter, I'm like, you guys having a rough day in there? Yeah, it's been busy. Like, I get it. You know, I'll be patient. Like, when we can help people out and when we can be human, I think it helps a lot to pay that forward, especially in public. And sometimes that leads to those opportunities where maybe someone wants to take my little business card about my podcast, or they're curious about, you know, we get to know each other once you get a certain level of trust with people, they're going to be a lot more willing to consider your philosophy, you know, and how you act might affect them if they respect you as opposed to if they don't. So, yeah, let's give it one more go around. If you guys got any closing thoughts, and then we'll finish up the show for tonight.
Well, I'd say, Chris, that what you do in those situations is exactly what is lacking at large. And if more people were to take that approach, then it would be almost it would be a force with in and of itself, you know, that this bureaucratic nonsense of like the rigmarole, they wouldn't be able to get away with it. These people need to be held to account, and what you're doing is holding them to account. Like saying, like, you know, no, words have meaning. Here are the definitions to the word in this contract. And you're saying that it doesn't mean that thing. And guess what? You're wrong. I'm right. And sometimes a little bit of indignation goes a long way. But if more people were to point out the wrongdoing, then the indignation that you feel might not be so intense, because they wouldn't be able to get away with it for any longer, you know, because anymore. These go-along types need to wake up and stop being go-along types, because the path that they are being escorted down leads to a slaughterhouse.
You're talking about the go-along?
Any other closing remarks? Go ahead. I don't want to step on you.
Go for it. I didn't want to step on you. I just wanted to say or ask to follow up on what you meant. Maybe I'm being cute, but is it the go along to get along, folks, in a sense?
I would say so.
Yeah, please. I want to hear your last remark.
The crowd. The crowd type of people, you know. I mean, the tribal, the viciously tribal types, you know, it's really difficult to live according to natural law when we're so vastly outnumbered. In comparison to the people that just go along to get along, because they like I mentioned earlier, they're prescribed this version of reality from a very early age, and it's a very difficult mind control mechanism to break out of. But I'm just saying that if it weren't so, then of course there wouldn't be the crap that we have to deal with these people that are trying to lead us down that path to what I call a slaughterhouse of tyranny and slavery to a degree that even now we can't even imagine. The plans that they have are just so disgustingly abhorrent. The behavior that they do, like, it disturbs me to my core, which is why I come onto places like this, because even if we reach three people, that's three more people. And maybe they can reach a million. I don't know. But it breathes a little bit of hope into the situation. Not like in a hopium sense where it's like, oh, we're not going to light and love our way out of this situation, folks. Like, it's just not going to happen. It's a little bit of a cliche at this point, but it's going to take some hard work and persistence to make the change happen where we are sitting on the other side, where it's like, you know, we're winning. You know, any other closing remarks that I have is like, well, you know, if I could just like tell people that this is what I do over on my main channel, is I try to teach people about voluntarism, because this is how we kind of, better get along, you know, and like, it's fair. Voluntarism is a great thing. Like it goes according to natural law. And so, that's why I try to teach people. And I take it from a historical point of view, where I go back and I read documents that were written by some historical figures, and stressing the point that how long have these ideas been around? These theories have been, you know, it really sends a chill down my spine that 175 years ago, like, there's solutions being presented to problems that are so, like, really difficult to solve now, but they could. Anyways, before I take up any more of the time tonight, like, I just wanted to point that out, that like, this is how we go forward. We have to respect other people's individual sovereignty, and there's two ways we can go. We can go the coercive route, or we can go the cooperative route. And the cooperative route is what leads to an increase of freedom. And that's what we need to do. We need to be abolitionists in our day-to-day lives, and we need to live according to the golden rule, and really take that and respect it and really take it seriously. So, with that being said, Like, thank you so much, Chris, for having me here again 2 weeks in a row. It's been so cool, and like I really, really appreciate the space.
Absolutely. Thanks for popping on, James. Your words are very valuable, and I really prize those of you that do this work and are, you know, it takes quite a bit to be prepared to show up something like this live and just get on and have a mic and have all your equipment ready. And, you know, it takes work to get to that point. It takes mental exercise and preparation. And those are all in that path of what puts us in that place of being good listeners or good speakers, good conversationalists, good communicators too, is the preparation leading up to those conversations and keeping ourselves in check and being self-monitoring. So you've obviously done a good job on a lot of those things. So appreciate that very much. And there's going to be more roundtables to come because it's something that I think makes this podcast awesome. So Derek, got some more words for us?
Yeah, because, you know, I love, you know, sharpening those swords, you know, with you guys, just, you know, refining our articulation on things. You know, it's great, you know, having our One Great Work Warriors meetings and all that stuff. Yeah, always a pleasure and honor to be in Connects. Much respects. And yeah, one who's understanding the truth cannot neglect or deny, or shouldn't rather, you know, the righteous indignation of things. And these are proper responses, you know, in regards to the sacred masculine principle of self-defense and all these things, and understanding on a deep, profound level that we have been violated or coerced against, type of thing, right? Otherwise, you know, that wouldn't show up in our feelings within our kind of like compass of also acting like a radar of, you know, the metaphysical stuff going on. And so we have to really alchemize the anger because it is very fucking potent. I tend to see it as like, think of it as like fire, you know, it could burn us up in others around us if we're not tending the fires properly and tempering, you know. That's why I love the temperance card with the tarot, because it reminds me of that. And yeah, so alchemizing our anger can augment our articulation and stuff. And we need to put possibly, well, you know, just going with the heart of communication, the art of communication, the art of articulation, you know. Sorry. So, yes, the masculine, feminine, right? The two pillars of enlightenment, that has to be properly balanced. I think, James, you were talking about that. For us to, you know, do no harm and take no shit, and understand that our words can, you know, be, you know, slicing and dicing through people sometimes, you know, even if, you know, people might be overly sensitive, whatever the fuck, it doesn't matter. What matters is that you are speaking from a place of care, right? And that the alchemy involved in that is going to keep us balanced and have our light, our inner light shine, but our heart as light as a feather, even if it's, you know, it seems like almost a really impossible task sometimes, especially during these draconian, this era that we're in, yet we're here to really try to effectuate proper positive change. So, appreciate everyone in the chats as well. Leslie Powers, what's up, Nate Cap, Theo Lukes, Rick, I saw you too, and Big Live Visions, yeah, for sure. Chris, thank you so much again for having this really cool two-part setup. I just love being able to express myself, and I love the fact you invited me on. And yeah, Dissolving the Divide, Leslie and I have a great show, podcast, if you will, and we've spoken a little bit about these topics that we covered, and specifically a video titled, like, the one divisive tool that can unite us all. And I was talking about that Excalibur, the sword of truth, you know, that's cutting through the lies, the bullshit and all that stuff. We need to wield that within ourselves, you know, and have that rhetoric. And, you know, so, yeah, we come together, we have these gatherings and we really try to build it up and, hold ourselves large and, not on that bullshit ego stuff or whatever, but, yeah, for those out there who appreciate these types of works, please feel free to share them and all that stuff. And, oh, yeah, last but not least, of course, because James, you said something about freedom, right? And it seems like the only way that's possible is under natural law. So, yeah, respects to the conference. I'm sure you'll end with that to a degree, Chris. And, yeah, Theo Lux and I have that cool website titled nattylaw.com. So that's all I'm going to plug in. And yeah, thanks so much, Mr. Grin again and again.
What else can we do, you know, but smile and grin and bear it, suffer through. Terry, any last words, my man?
I do have some last words. And I just want to bring up for anyone out there listening that I think one of the reasons you came up with this topic, Chris, was because of a lack of communication. Therefore, you bring the solutions as to how can we have this heart-based communication, and listening is key. I mean, you want to, you know, that's the 20% of what you have to do that gives you like 80% of the results, if that makes any sense. So I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah, Jerry, how do we spell heart? We have the ear in the middle of heart. How we spell it, sorry. Yeah, yeah. Maybe just think about that.
That was great. We should end it there.
Artistic. All right, well, I got one quick image I want to bring up before we shut down. And then if I can bring up that video you sent me, Derek, that you created, I'll do that next. But I'm kind of doing stuff on the fly here, so we'll see how it works. Okay, here, I came across this today, so I was looking through, from our conversation quite a while back, James Cordner's Voluntarist Academy Guidelines for Excellence. I think this is applicable. Practice selflessness. Show care for others. Own yourself in spirit and action. Remain calm in thought, emotion, and action. Think things through. Speak the truth. Be bold. Be courageous. And don't steal anything, spiritual or material, and do not initiate harm. So I think that's some pretty good stuff to kind of end it on here. And I'm going to video for you folks to hear real quick. If you just give me a moment, I'll bring that up. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for coming to the End Evil podcast. Evil is the destruction of freedom. Okay, local video. Here it is.
Just the tone of a sound wave changes the way that I behave. The less we speak, the longer we, the further that I float away. So put on your thinking cap. The more and more we drift apart, we count up through the bridge gap. Communicate through art, get through art, get through art, get through art, get through art.
Other people have a limit, but we've chose the poems. Every word is hand knitted, separating the mage from the image. Calculated movements make the visions vivid.
Rise up, rise up, rise up, rise up, rise up, rise up.